Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues here on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim with Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Fred Jackson.
Good morning to you.
How are you, Fred?
I'm doing great.
Thank you for listening, folks. If you want to go to the internet and listen and or watch there, you can go to Facebook or YouTube and just simply type in Today's Issues, and you can check us out there. Today's Issues on YouTube or Facebook. Also, we have you can download our podcast or...
Yes, you can go to AFR.net, and there's all kinds of great podcasts from our shows. If you don't have time to listen when a program is airing live, you can download the podcast for later. You can also listen, even if you're not around a terrestrial radio station, mm-hmm. You can download the app for American Family Radio on your phone, your tablet, or you can just simply go to AFR.net and on your computer and listen live as we stream the program there. So hey, audio, visual, whatever you want.
Do we broadcast on ham radio?
I think maybe the only place we don't. People
is
still
ham radio?
Use ham radios?
I was wondering, do you, Adam?
Oh, Adam, who's producing for
Adam
us today.
Adam Sutter, our producer today, filling in for Brent Creeley. So put the mic, grab that. I'm curious. We're curious.
You're live,
this.
Adam. All right. Yeah. You're live on
AFR. Tell us, I know ham radios was big back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Still big today?
Yes. And as people think that it's dying or going out, it's still a very vital emergency communication for whenever there's a natural disaster.
How does
disaster.
It work? Exactly. Do you know?
Like the FM radio works and AM radio, there are different formats of single sideband. Other.
But what carries the transmission? Is it?
It's the airwaves like the FM stations
or anything
like that. Because there's FM in ham radio. It's just on different frequencies than like the 89 or 88.
So is it carried? Does it bounce off a radio tower, or do you just have your own power source?
And you are the radio tower.
Generally. You are, okay.
Yes. I mean, there are repeaters in certain frequency ranges like the 2 meter range, which is 144 megahertz. There's usually repeaters there. You can still do simplex. I know these are all words that are foreign to most people, but to a ham or an amateur radio operator.
What's the furthest place a person was living that you talked to?
Me personally was New York, but only because I have not really gotten into the HF frequencies. So the people that generally think of ham radio is HF, which is just, and it's bouncing off of the ionosphere or the atmosphere and coming back down and can be in to multiple countries, maybe even around the world. But can
those people, you live in Mississippi, you're talking to somebody in New York.
Correct.
But now you, people in the U.S. can talk to people in China, right? On ham radio. Is that right or not?
Technically, yes. I don't know if the Chinese government allows anyone to use.
But technically, they
yes.
could.
Yes, correct.
All right, now I don't want to go all black helicopter on you.
Okay.
Okay. Can the government find you if it wants? Let's say you just started. You see these, you know, I don't know if they're movies or what, but if some ham radio operator who starts to talk about, hey, we got to stand up to the government, and the government comes crashing in his front door and arrests them. Can the government find you if you're broadcasting from your basement?
From my basement or from the, you know, it's a lot easier if you're stationary. If you're mobile, it's a little harder. But there are volunteer amateur radio operators that have equipment that will locate you and can position where you are locating, get it down within a small area, and then
Have you never watched NCSI?
NCIS.
Get that too?
I have watched
any of those four-letter things.
Yeah, I like that. I don't remember the ham
radio. Yeah, they can locate
thing.
You. Yeah, the blonde girl with the funny glasses. She'll locate you in about 3 seconds, my friend.
Huh? Oh, you're talking about the one on NCIS with Mark Harmon, the one who's all gothic.
Well, that one and then NCIS is NCIS.
The gothic one's no longer on the show.
No, it's been a while since
I'm talking about. I'm talking about the Los Angeles one.
Yes.
That's
the one with LL Cool J and...
isn't that the one with the blonde girl who does the computer stuff?
Yes, and her boyfriend or whatever.
Yeah, anyway.
It just always interests me that, you know, the government can find you and...
Well, that's what I just noticed on these cop shows like this, these detective shows or whatever you call those police shows.
Yeah.
That they all of them have got the computer whiz.
Yes.
That can wrap everything up in a nice tidy bow.
Yeah.
A nice tidy bow in the last 5 minutes of the show.
Yes, you got to have that.
Huh? All you got to do is bang, 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 bang on a keyboard.
And it pops up. Usually really fine graphics, too,
and
within screen.
Within 60 seconds, you watch them. They can find anybody in the world and know their full background.
Yes, that's
it's
right.
It's amazing.
Makes for a nice, neat, and tidy show.
All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Our apologies for getting off track here so early in the show.
Usually takes a while.
Yeah, we usually wait 7 or 8 minutes before we start rabbit trailing, but not today. We got busy right away. Fred.
Yes.
President of the United States of America is in Europe, or he was. Is he headed home now?
Not to my knowledge. He had a few more meetings this morning. He's there for a NATO summit. But the attention of the NATO summit or on the NATO summit has been very much divided because of what the president is facing back home here in America. In fact, the news stories this morning said you're going to see split screens today on your TV set. It's going to be the president. I think earlier today he met with the German leader. And he's meeting with Macron yesterday, the French leader. That's making some news. There's tension between those two gentlemen. The president kind of in the face of Macron saying France needs to take more of these terrorists and deal with them, take them into court. And Macron, of course, the French don't want to do that. And then there's the story this morning of there was some kind of social event last night. Prime Minister Trudeau of Canada was there and Macron, and they were caught on video from a distance what appears to be mocking President Trump, because every time he held a meeting yesterday, President Trump with one of these world leaders, and President Trump is being accused of holding news conferences, but the reporters, every time the meeting was opened up to reporters, the reporters keep asking President Trump about what's going on back here in the United States with regards to the Democrats' efforts to impeach him. And now they're mocking him. They said he held a 40-minute news conference before he even talked to me, et cetera, et cetera. But that's the way it's going. And the attention is back on this side of the water this morning, quite frankly, because phase two of what people are calling the Democrat impeachment circus is underway in Washington, D.C. this morning. And what's going on is that the House Judiciary Committee, headed by Democrat Congressman Gerald Nadler of New York, they are having a hearing of sorts, but it's not on the facts. The Democrats invited in three law professors to give their opinions as to whether the president, what he was doing with his phone call with the Ukraine leader, constitutes an impeachable offense. And we've already heard this morning from three of those professors, the three professors called in by the Democrats right now. We're looking at a screenshot here of Professor Jonathan Turley, who is the one that was the Republicans were allowed to invite in. But first of all, I want to play you the opening remarks from Chairman Nadler this morning and what he had to say.
Please, Fred.
In very serious tones. This is going to be cut number 9.
We are all aware that the next election is looming. But we cannot wait for the election to address the present crisis. The integrity of that election is one of the very things at stake. The president has shown us his pattern of conduct. If we do not act to hold him in check now, President Trump will almost certainly try again to solicit interference in the election for his personal political gain.
All right, so just to remind people, what he's referring to there is a phone call President Trump had with the new leader of the Ukraine back in July of this year, and they had a lengthy conversation, a tiny, tiny portion of that conversation. President Trump mentioned, by the way, are you going to investigate what Vice President Joe Biden did when he was vice president and the fact that Biden's son ended up in a very high-paying job with a Ukrainian energy company when his daddy was vice president. That was the course of it. That is what the Democrats are building their case around, that one particular incident. Now, I want to take you back to 1998. You heard Nadler this morning calling this a crisis. It must be dealt with immediately. Here was Nadler in 1998. Remember, that was the period when Bill Clinton was facing impeachment. Here was Nadler denouncing the idea that Republicans wanted to impeach Bill Clinton, 1998.
The effect of impeachment is to overturn the popular will of the voters. We must not overturn an election and remove a president from office except to defend our system of government or our constitutional liberties against a dire threat. And we must not do so without an overwhelming consensus of the American people. There must never be a narrowly voted impeachment or an impeachment supported by one of our major political parties and opposed by the other.
All right, that was him in 1998. He says the only reason impeachment can be justified, two reasons, the American public must want this.
They overwhelmingly.
Really, overwhelmingly.
And they don't.
And he said an impeachment must not be led by one party.
Right. And it is.
And it is.
So on the criteria that Jerry Nadler used for Bill Clinton's impeachment, which he was saying at the time President Clinton shouldn't be impeached because these standards are not met.
Correct.
He's not applying those same standards today to President Trump, and furthermore, what makes this worse is to me is this guy's in charge of the committee.
Yes,
right.
Doing the investigation of an impeachment, which shouldn't happen according to Jerry Nadler 20 years ago.
Right.
So,
and of course, now according to his definition of what impeachment, what impeachment proceedings should go forward. The impeachment proceedings against Bill Clinton were illegitimate. The impeachment proceedings against Richard Nixon would have been considered legitimate under Nadler's criteria because both political parties eventually came to the understanding that what Richard Nixon had done was illegal and worthy of impeachment. Republicans came to Nixon and so you're going to have to resign. Or you're going to get voted out of office,
yeah.
and Richard Nixon. Republicans and Democrats. So Nadler's criteria in '98 would if Republicans had held to it, they would have stopped the proceedings against Bill Clinton. If Jerry Nadler and Democrats held to his own criteria here in 2019, they would stop these proceedings because
yes.
It's clearly a political matter that is more akin to a witch hunt than anything akin to a legal.
But some of these Democrats strike me as people trying to talk themselves into believing something. It's kind of like to get behind closed doors and have a team meeting. Okay, everybody, we're going to have to go out there and act like this is the end of the world.
Yeah.
Because this can't be we can't do this halfway.
Okay? Well, they actually did practice, didn't they? They have practice for this
practice session?
They had a trial run.
They actually, the Democrats, led by apparently Nancy Pelosi, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, for 6 hours yesterday, they held a practice session. Are you ready for this? They held a practice session with a Democrat pretending to be Congressman Doug Collins. Another Democrat pretending to be Congressman Jim Jordan. All right. So here's a little bit of the interview this morning. Sean Spicer, former White House spokesman, spoke to this morning. He was being interviewed by Brian Kilmeade. Cut number two.
So, Sean, yesterday they had a six-hour prep session where they had people come in and play the role of Jim Jordan and Doug Collins. Wow. How do you prepare for two people to ask questions of somebody that's not there? I mean, what do they plan on? Are they trying to anticipate possible tactics of two people who want to ask contradictory questions?
Yeah, I mean, this goes back to this whole idea of it being a show. They recognize that people like Doug Collins and Jim Jordan are going to come in swinging and cut holes through the arguments, challenge their witnesses, and that they want to make sure that they think through all of that, because the last couple episodes at the plate of this show through the Intelligence Committee did not go well. And so clearly, I think that Nadler and company, and probably directed by Speaker Pelosi, are trying to recognize how do we, if this is all a show, which right. It is, to get the American people to side with us, how do we try to blunt some of these arguments and criticisms that Jordan and Collins in particular are going to come with?
Now, I don't think you can pretend to be Congressman Doug Collins or Congressman Jim Jordan. And that showed up this morning very early. Congressman Doug Collins, who is the ranking member on this committee. Here's a little bit of his opening statements after Congressman Nadler this morning. Cut number 10.
The chairman talked a lot about the founders from the quotes, and again, this is why we have the hearing, about the founders being concerned about foreign influence. But what he also didn't quote was the founders being really, really concerned about political impeachment. Because you just don't like the guy. You haven't liked him since November of 2016. The chairman has talked about impeachment since last year when he was elected chairman, 2 years ago, November 6th, 17th, before he's even sworn in as chairman. So don't tell me this is about new evidence and new things and new stuff. We may have a new hearing room. We may have new mics. And we may have chairs that aren't comfortable. But this is nothing new, folks.
That was Congressman Doug Collins, ranking member.
Good. My sentiments exactly, Congressman.
Yeah. My understanding is that Democrats hope to have a vote on articles of impeachment before Christmas. I think they would... You know, this is the thing. I think they are perfectly content with ruining everybody's Christmas by having articles of impeachment, so we can think about that over the Christmas, holidays, our vacation days, whatever. And then after the first of the year, we'll have a trial as the Democrats begin the process of going through the primaries and selecting their nominee. So this
And who's that nominee going to be that's going to benefit from all this, Ed?
Which one?
Yeah, which one of the nominees?
Harry
Legs Biden? Is it Kamala I'm dropping out Harris?
No, it's not going to be Kamala Harris.
Right.
She's done.
Kamala, rather.
Yeah. She's Kamala. I don't know. It doesn't matter now.
Is it Pete? Do you know I'm gay?
Buttigieg? Yeah. Gay mayor of...
I know I'm giving you topic whiplash here, but
it's
related. I mean, we got a horse race out there.
Elizabeth Warren, perhaps. Elizabeth. Don't forget Bernie Sanders. Could be Bernie.
Bernie.
Mm-hmm. Could be Weekend at Bernie's. If he gets the nomination.
Every time you mention a name, I say to myself, nah. So I'm like, keep going. Who's the one that's going to knock off Donald Trump for president?
Well, I continue to read that Hillary Clinton has not ruled out jumping into the race, although she's got to make the decision pretty quickly because the primary start or the Iowa caucuses start in February. First, I think Monday or Tuesday in February is the Iowa caucuses throughout the state. Mm-hmm. That's the first contest.
Yep.
Pete Buttigieg.
I just think you would have an outright civil war inside the Democrat Party if she jumped in there, because she, I just don't think, I mean, the Bernie Sanders people already can't stand her.
Right.
All right. Now, Elizabeth Warren's folks, in other words, it's hard to accept somebody who just jumps in the middle of the game,
right.
You know, just shows up in the middle of the game when you've got blood and sweat and mud all over your face.
Invested.
You've been duking it out. I'm talking about all the other Democratic candidates.
Besides, if she does do that, then they'll turn on her.
Yeah.
And they'll say, listen, it was just 2 years ago. Didn't we see that? Haven't we, you know, well,
right, you lost. You had your chance. You lost.
We saw this. We've seen this movie.
Right. Mm-hmm. Plus, you got Clinton, Bill Clinton, now being tied closer and closer to this Epstein fella. What's his first name? The guy?
Oh, Jeffrey?
Yes.
Yeah.
The late.
All that ugly scandal stuff, the sleaze.
I saw a headline. I didn't click through, but Bill and Hillary were frequent guests.
We had a good reputation before this happened.
Bill Clinton was Jeffrey Epstein's closest celebrity mate and frequent guest at his New Mexico ranch.
What I'm saying.
With his wife, Hillary.
They hung out together.
Yeah.
When they were not with Harvey Weinstein, the Clintons were with
Jeffrey Epstein. Epstein. I think it is Epstein in that case.
Epstein.
Did they go to the island?
They have any Protestant friends at all?
Careful.
Okay. So I'll be here all week, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, to your point, there's so much baggage for Hillary.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
The ego's there. I think she thinks she's going to ride in on the horse and save the Democratic Party from itself.
Now, Tim, we have to ask Ed about his early pick, Michelle Obama.
Michelle Obama.
Are you still in that camp?
Yes, I am. Now, it was not a pick in terms of the primaries. My guess was that if the Democratic National Convention this summer, whenever, if there is not a clear winner in terms of delegates, then a brokered convention looks outside the field, and I still think Michelle Obama. Now, we've had this discussion. Our listeners probably don't want to hear it again, but I do think that's a possibility that they convince her to run. Tim thinks she's having too much fun. Mm-hmm. I would agree with Tim if I was Hillary. I'm not trying to gender bend. Michelle Obama. I'm not trying to be gender bending here, but if I had as much money and opportunity as they have to just have the good life, I wouldn't jump into that mess. But
plus, if you bought a house that's going to be underwater in 10 years, you want to use it.
Yes.
Okay.
Before so climate change, right.
At the Hamptons or
they just bought a multi-million dollar.
Wherever the Obamas bought their new house there, on the water.
I'm pretty sure they paid cash for it, too.
Yeah.
So anyway, so we'll see.
Well, this brings us to a name that heretofore hasn't been mentioned on this show, Red. Who else has decided on the Democrat side to jump in there?
Oh, Mr. Bloomberg?
Oh, yes. Michael Bloomberg.
Michael Bloomberg.
Michael Bloomberg. Michael, that Coke is too large for you to buy.
Bloomberg. But
nothing over 20 ounces.
This guy is one of the wealthiest men in the world, certainly in the United States.
Worth over $50
billion. $50 billion.
That's more than twice what I have in the bank
of
this moment.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Huh? He dwarfs your...
More than twice.
He dwarfs your bank account, Ed.
Yeah.
Huh? But you're talking about a guy who doesn't need anybody's money to run. I guess he can... Can he fund his whole campaign?
He's already spent $150, and that's pocket change.
You got $50 billion. You can fund anything you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. To put that in perspective, I think Donald Trump, businessman Donald Trump, was worth...
10, wasn't he?
Something like that.
Not even that. I heard five or six.
Five or so.
Just five or six billion.
Billion dollars. I don't know.
That's weak. That's weak money. That's chump change.
If you're Michael Bloomberg.
That's Trump change.
Nah, Trump change. That was good, Ed. I like that.
Well, I do what I can.
All right. But anyway, we'll talk about Michael Bloomberg a little bit when we get back, because some people are saying, you know, he's the guy who could take on President Trump on the Democrat side. But
I'm going to give you a little advance insight into my opinion. He's not.
Okay. You don't think a Michael Bloomberg, Michelle Obama ticket is what's going to end up happening at the
No,
end?
I don't.
All right. We will return momentarily with more of today's issues on the American Family Radio Network.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Jan Markell of Understanding the Times Radio.
The globalists thought they had the perfect one-world candidate, Hillary Clinton. For some reason, God said it isn't quite time yet for the globalist system.
We'll also talk with Bill Pfister of Samaritan's Purse about the greatest journey. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. I am currently reading a book titled 1776 by David McCullough. I would highly recommend this book about our country's founding. It's been on my to-do list for 10 years, and I finally got around to it. But an excellent book it is, and a lot of it's about the life of George Washington. What an amazing story. Without George Washington, I doubt I would be talking to you today. That's how instrumental and important he was to our country's founding. He was a man used by God. We're going to be going to Mount Vernon, his home, on our Spiritual Heritage Tour in June and September. Our tours in June and September, Spiritual Heritage Tours to Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon. And then we're going to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown on a separate tour. For all the information, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. Again, that's spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
For me, Truett means opportunities.
Truett means an adventure, a place where I can grow and become more like Jesus.
This is somewhere I belong.
To me, Truett is like a home far away from home.
Everyone is family from all different walks of life and from all over the world.
To me, Truett means a second home.
Truett McConnell University is home for me.
Hi, this is Todd Starnes, and now you know why I love Truett McConnell University. The Washington Post fashion critic published a scathing attack on First Lady Melania Trump's wardrobe, lambasting her coat selection as ludicrous, discomforting, and a fashion folly. Robin Givem called Mrs. Trump's white Christmas coat a silly fashion folly. She said it was a ridiculous distraction, taken to a ludicrous extreme. Well, look, I'm no Dolce & Gabbana, but I thought it was a nice-looking coat. The First Lady has been subjected to years of hateful abuse by members of the mainstream media, especially the folks who get paid to write about hats and shoes for a living. Mrs. Trump is elegant and graceful, and she loves our nation. She is the epitome of American style and culture, and it drives the leftist mainstream media bonkers. I have to say, I'm wondering if Miss Given was raised right, as we say back home in the South. Otherwise, she would have known that if you don't have something nice to say, you should just hush up. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Welcome back to the program, everybody. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. And I'm Tim Wildman with Ed Vitagliano. Sorry.
You can be Ed Vitagliano today, whatever you want.
I was going to self-identify there, but I don't know. How much debt do you have?
Listen, if you want to steal my identity,
right,
you're welcome to it. And you're going to find out that there are a lot of bad people looking for me.
Want your identity.
You're gonna commit this phrase to memory. No, I'm not Ed Vitagliano. I know him, but I don't even like him. Just commit that to your memory.
Fred Jackson with me as well, Tim, and I'm Tim. I know who I am. Hey, speaking of identity theft, the phone companies evidently are catching up with these. A lot of these. Did you get the fraud alerts on your phone?
Not on my phone. I get, you know, fraud alerts on email messages.
This company I use, which we'll go and mention for my cell phone, when a call comes in, they've evidently screened it and determined that it's fraud or spam,
Really?
And they
like a telemarketer or
something? And they tell you fraud alert, so you don't answer it.
Huh.
Okay. I don't answer it anyway if I don't know who it is.
Me
but,
either.
Huh?
Me either.
But it's pretty, the, I guess the people in who work on security inside, you know, corporations to protect people's, pick the, their customers, you know, they're always having to try to stay one step ahead of the fraud,
right.
of the fraudsters out there.
Not easy either.
I know. Mm-hmm. And people who have their, have you ever had your credit card stolen or anything like that? Or
no, but we've changed our habits. Like, for example, when I go to get gas, I go inside and pay rather, because, you know, they have those skimmers out at gas, that gas pumps.
I've heard about that. How does that work exactly?
They slip something into the, where you put your card.
The card reader.
The card reader, and they get your information off your card.
Yep.
So the way to avoid that is to go inside the
store? Yeah. You know, you do it old school. You go inside, and you swipe your card or put your chip, you know, your card in, and those are generally more protected. Mm-hmm. The ones outside, someone can slide up and get gas and then put the skimmer in.
Yep.
I mean, that's
I don't know.
Though,
you know what? That's going to put me in sort of a moral dilemma right there because I have such a I don't know what you call it. I don't want to say hatred, but it borders on that for cold weather. So if I'm out there and I'm pumping gas and I'm in my, you know, I'm going to have to choose now between going in and paying for it or taking the chance of being skimmed, as you say.
Yeah, but I mean, you still got to pump the gas, right? What, a few extra seconds as you walk in?
Well, a few extra seconds in the cold weather. That's what I'm saying. That creates a moral dilemma for my soul and my body.
Well, just make your
I don't know. I wish you would. I just wish you would have never told me that. That's what I wish.
Just make your wife do it.
Actually, Walker, my son, told me last night for the first time there was a store nearby where we go frequently get gas, and he said this has happened 3 or 4 times to people there. So evidently, it's a real problem out there, or growing problem. All right, Abraham Hamilton III joins us. He's the host of the Hamilton Corner each afternoon, Monday through Friday on AFR from 5 to 6 o'clock Central Time. And he also serves as our public policy analyst and general counsel here at American Family Association. Good morning, Abe.
Good morning, Tim. Fred, Ed.
You ever been scammed or had your...
No, thank God I have not been. But I covered a story this week on the Hamilton Corner. I don't know if you guys have heard about this yet. Most of us are familiar with the reality that Facebook, Google, Amazon, and others basically sell your search data and things to retailers.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know, as of November 21st, banks are joining the ranks of selling data to third parties to make money off of them? As of November 21st, Wells Fargo, Chase, and other banks, and specifically those who bank right now who have credit cards, they are, because Facebook and Google, they basically sell your search information.
Right.
But your banks actually have your purchase history and know what you buy. And banks are now getting into the business of selling your consumer history to third-party retailers. And I told the listeners, what's happening is you probably get updated user agreements from your banks.
Which how many are of us? 12 pages long.
12 to 15 pages. How many people read them into where you are agreeing to allow the banks to do that? So I encourage the listeners first to contact their banks and credit card companies to ask them if they are doing those things, and secondarily to allow you to opt out, because you can opt out.
You can?
You can opt out, but you have to ask for it.
That's
in order to opt out.
They can sell your personal information, like your address and email and everything, without your knowledge?
No, they're selling your purchase history. And here's the thing. Each bank has different practices. So you want to find out what exactly they are selling. They shouldn't be selling your private identifying information. They're saying they're only selling your purchase history. And so the way this works is, let's say, I don't know, Tim Wildman just purchased airline tickets. He might be traveling somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if a third-party rental car company would be interested in floating
an
advertisement to Tim Wildman about thrifty
it's not
or
really,
dollar.
It's not really sinister or illegal. It's commercialism. It's they're trying to make another dollar off of your
off of you as a customer.
And I understand that's a lot of people object to that, and I understand why. I just know, and we've talked about this before. I know that I can be looking at a news site, for example, and then all of a sudden on the side is an advertisement for a golf club I wanted.
That's right.
And my eyes gravitate over there.
That's right.
And I go, how did they know that I wanted that golf? Huh?
Because your web browser, whoever you're using for your web browser, is selling your search history, the things you've been looking at, to these third parties. And that's how they're tailoring with their algorithms the advertisement for you. All I'm saying is that the banks are getting in on this phenomenon.
Let me just tell you, until I caught on to this game.
What I'm talking about
what
happening.
What you're talking about happening. Yeah. I thought, wow, there must be a lot of Boston Bruins hockey fans. Because every website I go to, there's stuff advertising Bruins tickets. And at first, I thought, how many Bruins fans are there?
Right, everybody,
they're trying to get everyone. Then I realized they were tailoring it to me.
Right. Oh, man.
And the thing is, it's not sinister, but a lot of people are concerned about what could happen.
Yes.
With this information. And one, if that's happening to you, at least you should want to know about it if it's happening and agree to it or disagree.
Yeah, by not sinister, I mean, it's not people trying to steal from you. It's people trying, but they are abusing your information.
Yeah.
Because they want to make a dollar. Somebody wants to sell your information so they can do precisely what you and I just talked about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The big thing I don't like about that is it forces you to opt out.
Yes.
Right.
They opt you in without your permission.
Because everybody would opt out.
Yeah. They're going to say, no, you agreed to it because when you signed our updated user agreement, which, oh, by the way, if you refuse to sign it, you no longer would be one of our customers.
Right.
When you signed that, you agreed to it.
Uh-huh.
Oh, well. Well, so watch out is what you're saying.
I'm just saying.
We're really depressing Tim.
Yeah.
Now he's going to be paranoid getting gas.
Right. I don't know. Skimming, though. I have heard what you described, Ed, so I don't know. Maybe I'll just go on in. Even if the weather's 45, you know, gets down to 42.
Just send Allison. And, you're the man of the house.
Well, I'm by myself.
If you guys hear that Tim Wildman is not in the office in the next couple of weeks, just know that Ed's woman council may or may not have attributed to that.
That ain't gonna work.
I talk pretty brave when I'm sure my wife's not listening.
Oh, I wish. This is funny.
This is
Look at Tim's face.
Okay. we drive separate cars for the most part, so I'm not gonna face that decision whether to tell Allison to go in the store and pay for it.
And God created podcasts, guys. They don't have to be listening live.
We'll see how big and tough Ed is next time he comes in to do the show.
How about a humana, 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 humana? Oh, baby.
Yeah,
come on.
We're going to come in next time. Ed's going to go, first thing I'd like to do is I'd like to apologize to my wife. Evidently, I said something wrong on Wednesday when I was on the show.
I'm tired of bologna sandwiches. Help a fellow out.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, we had Abe in to... Abe, what did you bring a topic in? Because I said leave the topic to Abe. We wanted to talk to you about.
Well,
today.
Yeah, I brought it in. This is you know when my nerdy side peeks out.
You have a nerdy side?
Well, yeah. I've been told so. Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. Where there is a trend that's happening at the Supreme Court that is not obvious, but if you're paying attention, you could see this happening. There was a case last term styled Gundy versus the United States. Where the Supreme Court refused at that time to reinstall what's known as a non-delegation doctrine. Now, before I get into the weeds of the doctrine, the way it all transpired is because Justice Kavanaugh had to recuse himself from the case. So you had a 4-4 split, basically the continual regressives, the most consistent regressives on the court, and then the three more consistent conservatives, and then the matador. John Roberts, they were all on one side together.
Matador.
Yeah,
I get it.
John Roberts. And so because of Kavanaugh's recusal, there was no way that you were going to have a constitutionalist outcome for this case.
Hmm.
And in that case, Justice Alito did something that I thought was very prudent, to where he joined a majority to force the Supreme Court to go on record with whether or not they would affirm the non-delegation doctrine or reject it. Now, what the non-delegation doctrine is, very simply, Article 1, Section 1 of the Constitution says all legislative power is vested in Congress. As a result, the non-delegation doctrine says that the American people, through their representatives, ratified a Constitution that gave legislative power exclusively to Congress and no one else. As a result, Congress does not have the lawful constitutional authority to delegate that power to anybody else. Unfortunately, since the New Deal era, we in the United States have been governed by what's called the intelligible doctrine, which basically says, well, you know, even though all legislative power is given to Congress, Congress can just give a bare bone law and then these third party administrative agencies can flesh out the details as long as the details are intelligible. And the basic rules literally say as long as the administrative agencies can construe something that is within the public interest, that's convenient or necessary, and it's just and reasonable, then they can do it. Well, of course, you can see with that vague language, the agencies can do whatever they want, which is what has been happening.
Mm-hmm.
Well, since then, there was a case that came up in the Supreme Court about last week or so. And I have the case style for those who.
And as you're looking for that, you're talking about agencies like the Environmental Protection Agency,
yes.
The Department of Education, et cetera,
yes.
Health and Human Services, all that.
Yes, there was a case last week styled Paul versus the United States, where Justice Kavanaugh had the first opportunity to weigh in on this whole non-delegation doctrine versus intelligible principle and say, hey, this intelligible principle is unconstitutional. So now you have Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, Alito, Thomas, and Roberts all on record. This is the first time since the New Deal era where there are five justices who have all gone on record to say, hey, by the way, Congress is the only branch that should be legislating anything in our country. Anything done by these agencies should be unconstitutional.
Well, just kind of clarify real quick, when you say New Deal, tell our listeners what you're talking
about.
Yeah,
the New Deal era is FDR, where his entire vision of governing America was, we don't need Congress, we don't need the American people. All we need is these unelected bureaucrats, basically, who are the elite of our society, pulling the levers of our society and moving us away from having the American people weigh in on our governance and getting these elite agencies really to do everything. So
kind of started under FDR.
Right.
Yes. And so you move forward and you people are wondering, well, how does Congress have all this time on their hand to do these impeachment inquiries and all of these other things? Because they're not doing much of anything else. Mm. If you look at the substantive legislation being passed by Congress versus the amount of regulations that are coming out of Washington, D.C.,
that's true.
It pales in comparison. Mm. There is hardly any substantive legislation being passed. Mm. And so this development, for the first time in decades, puts us in a position, because what the Supreme Court is doing by having these justices on record, they're announcing for all the country to know, hey, lawyers, if you want to challenge this, do it now and get a case to the Supreme Court and they'll reverse
in
this.
In fact, all Congress basically does, the only thing they basically vote on is how much money to give to the administrative state.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's all they do.
That's why you have today. These huge omnibus bills, because you have all of this money being distributed to these agencies.
Well,
when here we are saying, hey, what about the accountability to us as the American people?
Also related to that is the fact that in the Senate, there is the 60-vote threshold.
That's right.
Yes.
This so-called, well, it's not so-called, or is it so-called? It's a filibuster.
Yes.
In other words, you have to have 60-plus votes to overcome a veto by the president.
Well, not only that, you have to have 60 votes to vote on a bill.
Well, yeah. But to vote, yeah. So you have a 60-vote threshold. So because the Congress has been so closely split between the Republicans and Democrats on the Senate side in particular, Obama didn't get anything passed, and Trump doesn't get anything passed.
It would put tremendous pressure on Congress to actually both parties come to the table and get things passed if the administrative state could not pass regulations.
That's exactly right.
Because then people would realize nothing's getting done in D.C.
And that they would hold their elected officials more accountable.
Yeah.
So what you're saying, for those who don't understand the minutiae of all that's been discussed the last few minutes that you brought to our attention, the overall bottom line or the overarching theme here is very positive.
Yes.
Coming out of the Supreme Court.
Yes.
And this could go a long way to having a more responsive, more constitutional form of government restored Right?
That's right. In
the coming years.
Even with Obamacare, and that's the most recent, a recent example that's popular in people's minds, mm-hmm. a lot of the heavy lifting from Obamacare didn't come through Congress.
Yes.
It came through the HHS, the Department of Health and Human Services.
Yes.
I know, and if you know, so many of these agencies that we have now, these federal agencies, and they have the people that work for them, right? And a lot of them, we know, you know, people who work for some of these agencies. I'm not saying people are bad people. I'm saying that they get rules and regulations that are basically drawn up by the agencies themselves.
Yes, that's right.
And they're not elected by anybody.
No,
right.
And they have the effect of law.
And in fact, how many times have I heard stories of this? Where somebody confronts a rule or regulation that you go, how in the world is this possible? Why is somebody, why are you telling me I can't do this or that? And you're from this three-letter agency that's from the federal government. And then you call your congressman's office, and the congressman's aide goes, huh, I never heard of that rule.
Exactly.
I never heard of that regulation. I'll have to call and find out myself. I mean, and many of the congressmen and senators themselves, they don't know.
And they can't get anything changed.
No, they can't.
They can't do anything because the
it's so big.
Congress has given authority to this agency. Here's something else.
It's kind of scary. It's scary.
It is. If this were to be overturned and go back to a constitutional perspective, we all complain about the federal government is out of control, it's expansive, it's reaching into every nook and cranny. What you would have is you'd have members of Congress being besieged by requests to pass laws about this, and they would say, we don't have time for that.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
There is a very limited number of things we can get done every year, and so we don't have time for that. Go to your state legislature.
Right. Exactly.
And you would
return. That's how it's supposed to work.
That's how it's supposed to work.
It's almost as if there is a thing called limited powers.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. I think you're onto something right here. Yeah.
Hey. Well, honestly, it's not my original thought.
Just a quick question. Also, we have known over the last 3 years that President Trump gets taken to court for every move he tries to make. A lot of the issues, correct me if I'm wrong, he's taken to court on issues that are not part of law, but part of a regulation. I'm thinking DACA.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a...
DACA was an Obama
That's a perfect example.
Executive order.
Executive order. And again, all legislative power, all means all, is vested in Congress. That means no other branch of the federal government has the authority to create legislation.
Yes.
This is why even President Obama, as progressive, quote, progressive, or as Abe calls him, regressive as he was in his political ideology, he said over and over again, I can't do this. I don't have the authority to authorize DACA.
Yes.
Only Congress can do that. This is Obama saying this over and over again. Now, finally, he did it and basically said, we'll see what happens. I'll do it.
Yeah.
That's basically what he said. Of course, nothing happened, really, because the Democrats supported, even though they didn't pass it as legislation, because of the 60-vote rule, they couldn't get it through. But I'm just saying that there's an example, Fred, you're bringing up of Obamacare, DACA, rather, becoming a law when it isn't a law at all.
Well, and here's another thing that has happened since the New Deal is that it has created this bizarre combination framework where Congress authorizes, let's say, the Environmental Protection Agency to carry out the regulation of the environment. So Congress is not passing laws anymore. But the agency exists under the executive branch.
That's right.
So that's why you have presidents issuing executive orders to this agency inside the executive branch.
Yes.
And so you have a hybrid.
That's right.
You have a hybrid framework within the government that is neither legislative branch nor executive branch. It's somewhere in between. And when it's out of control, you go, well, How do we rein it in?
It's a federal Frankenstein.
Yeah.
It's a federal Frankenstein, and a lot of people don't realize how dangerous this is, but this is literally amending the Constitution without amending the Constitution.
And how many horror stories can our listeners tell us? We've all experienced this sometime in our life, if you had to deal with the federal government agencies at all, where you call to get something done and or to ask somebody a question, you don't get an answer, you don't get any action. You get treated like, well, who are you? And then, you end up, and then you get off the phone, and you for the third call, they're going to transfer you to somebody.
Yeah.
For three or four times, you get elevator music.
And you're going to go to war with a federal agency?
Well, and then you try to get a name of a person you're talking to about whatever topic it is you're talking to them about. Because Allison, my wife, experienced this a few weeks ago, trying to help a person get a passport.
Yeah.
Who's going on our tour to Israel in March. They're trying to help this elderly gentleman get a passport. He was getting no satisfaction from whoever he was working with. They were treating him like, you know, who are you? We'll get back to you when I can. The problem was, I told Allison, I said, you know what? I know most of the people who work for the federal government are good people. I understand that. They're patriotic, just like, yeah. But, human nature is, if you know you're at a job and you can't be fired.
Right.
Huh? If you're at a job and you know you can't be fired, and you know what? That day you don't feel like helping, John. Yeah. Because why? You're planning your own vacation.
Right.
Or whatever you're doing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then you have no boss, really, except your superior.
Right.
Well, your superior has been there long enough to develop the same type of attitude you have.
Right.
And the only people that can fire them are somebody in Washington. Who works for, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What do we call this? The big fat bureaucracy,
yes.
Right? And it's been growing, by the way. how many federal government jobs have been added in the last just 10 years?
Well, like you said, it has changed the politics of Virginia.
Yes.
Because of people who work in D.C. but live in Northern Virginia.
Yeah. And please don't misunderstand us, folks. I've tried to say it two, three, four times here. I understand there are a lot of wonderful people, even people who listen to us right now, who work for the federal government, who are very conscientious, who do their job to the best of their ability. But I'm just saying, we all know human nature, and if you have a culture built in where there's literally very little accountability for job performance. And you're going to, and it doesn't really matter to your payroll, bottom line, because you're supported by tax dollars, not
right.
by somebody buying your product.
Not by making the customer happy.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, you're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Hey, I wanted to mention one other story here.
Mm-hmm.
Newsweek, the Newsweek story. Mention that real quick, Fred.
Newsweek story. Newsweek has fired a reporter because she wrote a story during the Thanksgiving weekend that President Trump was spending the weekend down at Mar-a-Lago, his estate in Florida, and he was tweeting and playing golf. But when the story went out there, guess where the president was? He was in Afghanistan. She wrote a story that was completely false.
More fake news.
She did not practice journalism. She didn't even check the president's schedule.
No.
No.
No. She just said, I hate Trump. Today I'm going to say he's golfing and tweeting on Thanksgiving. That'll make him look bad today, and then I'll think of something else tomorrow.
Right.
That was her attitude. Well, guess what? The president was in Afghanistan surprising our troops with a visit, and this reporter said that he was golfing and tweeting. Well, Newsweek had to fire her.
Yep.
And then the editor
was demoted.
Got demoted. President Trump said, I didn't even think Newsweek was in business anymore.
Is that what he said?
Yes, that's what he said. It was classic Trump right there.
Yeah.
All right, thank you, Abe.
Thank you, guys.
All right, we'll return in a few minutes. Stay with us.